hearing from Joan Nelson. She writes, "This is my story. It's a truthful account of how I came from confusion to Christ. How I came to realize that this organization that I had put not only my life, but also that of my children's, was a farce. A way to keep us hidden from the glory and peace that God's love gives to His children." So we're going to go on another journey with another lady, from confusion to Christ, Joan Nelson.
Well, those are two tough acts to follow. First, I want to thank you guys for even having this convention. About a year and a half ago, when I came out of the organization, I am very new out, and all of my words are still very organized, organizationally correct, I think. Last year, when I even heard an Extra Jehovah's Witness convention, I was just amazed that there was someone else out there who had gone through some of the things I had. And the more I learn, and the more I hear, and the more experiences and testimonies, the more amazing it is, the power that we really gave the Watchtower. And that's really, really important that that's out there. That's the only reason I'm up here today, because otherwise I'd probably want to keep this all to myself. I was actually born to a woman who wasn't married. I was illegitimate. And when I was very young, she married this man who really liked little girls. And very quickly they found a church that really suited their needs. It was the Worldwide Church of God. So that was what I was raised in. I was brought up in an organization that taught Armageddon was coming, that we would be going through the same things that went through with the Holocaust, that we would need to at some point prepare our children for that, that you had to be worthy to survive through Armageddon, which of course I wasn't. I was illegitimate. And so I lived with that. The women in the organization also were very obedient, or taught to be obedient, and if you thought for yourself, you constantly went through the fear of being wrong, of being just not worthy. I can remember so many times, I can't even count how many times I took a gun away from my mother to keep her from killing herself, how many times I grabbed that gun. At 35, I can pretty much say that I can probably match a year for a test of suicide attempts. So it's something that was really deeply instilled. My parents were very, very strict. We went to the Feast of Tabernacles. We kept all the holy days. We kept the Sabbath. Couldn't watch cartoons on Saturday morning. It was a very, very strict environment. When I turned about 4 years old, because my father was so friendly, I quit talking, and I was actually hospitalized, and that really scared him into stopping any type of abuse from that side. So the abuse went from a sexual side over to a very physical side. By the time I hit 16, I've had black eyes, dislocated jaws, broken nose, all kinds of fun stuff. And I usually got off better than my brothers, because they would stand there and take it. They were young men, and they didn't cry. I did the crocodile tears and really got away with a lot. Someone, one of my friend's father, said that he had 8 children, and my dad said, "Well, they're so well-behaved. How did you get them to be so well-behaved?" He goes, "Well, I punch them. Don't care if they're boy or girl. Don't care where the fist lands. I just punch them." And my dad thought that was just the coolest form of discipline he could imagine. And that's really where things went. That's how things were as a child in that organization that supported it. When I turned about 15, I kind of started thinking a little bit that I didn't understand all of that. And a lot of people outside of this Worldwide Church of God were pretty good people. They took away makeup all of a sudden, couldn't date now until I was 16, whereas the other church, we switched congregations. The first one I could date at 13, so now the pastor controlled things like that, and that was kind of frustrating to a teenager. They were having a prom, because you couldn't associate with the people at school, so for that prom, I was going to go, but they pulled me aside, and they said, "Well, we know that you've talked to this young man, his name was Ron, and I want you to understand that when you go to the dance, because he's black, you're not going to be able to dance with him." And I had never seen this organization as racial in any manner. I was raised that there really wasn't a difference. I knew that you had to agree to not have children if you got married biracially, and that they didn't encourage that. But I didn't comprehend how far that would extend, that even a dance as a 15-year-old with no premeditated thoughts at all, I would have been marked, because they marked too. And so I chose not to go. It was just that simple. I was really frustrated with the whole thing. At that point, my mom got tired of being abused by my father and chose to leave. And my dad decided that he was really going to show me some more attention. And that wasn't something I was really prepared for. I was 16 years old. I started working at McDonald's. And we had a manager there. And he kept asking me why I wouldn't come in on Friday. I wouldn't work Friday night. And I couldn't come in on Saturday till sunset. So finally, I told him it was a religious belief. And so we started talking about the Bible. And he actually knew something about the Bible. So I was impressed with that. So we were dating a little bit. And he had never told me what his religious affiliation was, but that he had read the Plain Truth, and he knew what Armstrong taught, and so forth. So one day he said, I've got this thing I'm going to go to. Why don't you go with me? I said, okay, what is it? He goes, well, once a year we get together and we do this thing, and it's a church thing, kind of, I guess you could call it that. You might like it. So I said, no, okay. I said, where's it at? It's at a Kingdom Hall. Well, what's a Kingdom Hall? I had never heard of it. I really didn't know, because when witnesses came to the door, you didn't talk to them because they were evil. Little did I know, huh? So anyhow, I wanted to find out a little bit more about the Kingdom Hall and the witnesses, and you know, all the pieces kind of roll together when you're all said and done. But at the time, I went and got this great book called Kingdom of the Cults. And at first I read about my dad's church. And I kind of took what I wanted out of that. Then I read about the witnesses and basically walked away with the idea that you can't go to war and you kill your children because you don't take blood. So I went to the memorial with him, and I had a ton of questions. And we walked out of there, and he said, well, what'd you think? I said, well, it was pretty interesting. I said, I don't get it. You know, because now I was living in a religion where you obey the laws of Moses, basically. You clean and unclean meat and all the holy days, all of those things we did. I said, so basically you guys don't think you're under the Ten Commandments. At least you know you're not the truth because you don't take the emblems. And he said, what do you mean? I said, well, no one partook. So you guys know you're not right. Wow, that's a haughty attitude, I was told. So we talked about it a little bit more, but bottom line is really neither one of us were very religious. Even if that's what he was, it really didn't make a lot of sense to me. And we continued a relationship. My dad was trying to be very aggressive, and so we decided to get married. So at 17, I got married. And the deal was, when I got married, that I was in 11th grade. I would finish up my finals after our wedding, then move up to Michigan, live with his family. And in that time frame, I would go back and take my senior year of high school. This was still in the 80s, so it wasn't... It didn't seem that unusual that I would still be able to go to high school. So we did go ahead and do that. His parents came down for the wedding, which was at just a justice of the peace type of thing. And I found that he was an inactive witness, which, again, didn't mean anything to me. I moved up to Michigan with his family, and I was told, you don't need to finish high school because, you know, if you rely on God, God's going to let your husband take care of you. Well, I was not really a witness yet, so I at least made sure I got my GED and got that out of the way because just, you know, it'd be nice to rely on him, but I was a little anxious about that. My first night there, his mom gave me a Live Forever book and a Bible and offered to study with me. Well, I thought I knew the Bible real well, so that was okay. And she threw some scriptures out there, and so did I, and we started talking, and we had 6 and 7 hour studies. And within 6 months, I was a baptized witness. As soon as I got past the fact that we were not under the Sabbath, the rest was easy because I didn't celebrate holidays. I had never celebrated Christmas. I had never voted. I didn't care about the flag one way or the other because the Worldwide Church of God really didn't teach that either. But I also had always had a goal of being married and having children, and that really goes against the organization's goals. And... yesterday, the brother on the slide presentation said that the grace of Jehovah extends to children through the parents. And that's something that's really strongly stressed. And so I knew when I had children, I was going to give them everything and they wouldn't miss out at all. I would never have a child who would say, I didn't play. I would never have a child who felt like they didn't get Christmas, so they were left out. And I got pregnant, and I got really scared that I wouldn't be a good mom. I read in the Watchtower, children can learn 5 languages by the time they're 2. I didn't know anything but English. I didn't know what to do. So I tried to talk to my mother-in-law, who was my teacher and my mentor, and she told me Jehovah would provide. And that wasn't good enough for me, because I couldn't do it, and no one else knew I was pregnant. So I took a whole bunch of sleeping pills and ended up getting my stomach pumped. I spent 9 months worried about the baby. When Sarah was born, my oldest, I just wanted so bad to give her Jehovah. And I knew from what I was raised already that I probably wasn't worthy, and that was okay. I accepted that, but I really wanted her to have Jehovah. And so at 4 months of age, we were pioneering together. Me and her alone at the doors, because that was my second person, and no one was going to go with me. And we went to the doors. By the time Sarah was 2.5 years old, she was very, very smart. She knew all the books of the Bible. We learned them by facial features, Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus. And we went through the whole, all up and down everywhere looking for body parts. She could quote scriptures. She would turn down a candy cane at the door. She really was very open to learn. But she was also, there were 2 or 3 older sisters who would take her, because at 4 months of age, I was in the bathroom whooping her. Because she was making noise at the kingdom hall, and you just can't do that. You have to learn respect for Jehovah. By the time she was 5 years old, she could pretty much teach you anything you needed to know, because we all know Armageddon's coming, and the parents are going to be taken away, and her brothers and sisters' lives would be in her hands. And how I could let her do that without getting her ready was just beyond what I could think. A couple years later, I was 19 when all that started. When I was 23, I got pregnant again. And I had a little boy who was just like the neatest thing in the world. When I was pregnant for him, I was having problems with his dad, and his dad had an affair, and I went to the elders, and of course it was, what did you do to make it happen? And then I was told I could leave. I could leave, that was fine, but if I left, it would be with no insurance, no money, and he'd take custody of the first child. But it was up to me whether I chose to grant forgiveness. So I stayed, but I really, really hated the other sister. Because it was a sister, and of course she wasn't marked, and he wasn't marked, it was only me, and I couldn't talk to anyone, because if you did, you got it out, and then he wouldn't come to the kingdom hall, and I was blood guilty. So we're at a catch-22 there. So I didn't have a support group with that, and I hated her. I mean, I would dream ways to kill this woman. And so I couldn't go in service. So I wasn't teaching my kids. And the suicide attempts continued. Finally, at some point, I couldn't do it no more. I was trying to tell my husband, we had just moved to Florida, that I could not be with him anymore. I had been through everything I could do, and it was over. The physical abuse, the mental abuse, everything, it had to stop, because I couldn't think of enough ways to get through the day. And I just kept thinking, if I'm just gone, I'm just going to sleep in death, that's okay. I don't have a problem with that. And the kids would be raised, and they would make it through Armageddon. That was my only concern in life. And I was at the top of the apartment stairs telling him, I just can't do this no more. And he gave one good swing and sent me flying down the stairs. That was the last time he hit me. We don't realize sometimes how much our children are affected by these things. A few months later, I was driving by the apartment with my kids, and my little boy said, there's my apartment, there's where I live. I said, well, yeah, that's where you live with Daddy, then you have a place where you live with Mommy. He said, yeah, Mommy used to live there too until Daddy pushed her down the stairs. And he was 2, and he was telling me this. I was just like, if that wasn't heartbreaking enough, about 6 months ago, my daughter said, Mom, do you know that I still don't walk down the stairs with anyone behind me? She's 16 now, and those things stay. I don't walk down the stairs with someone behind me, but I didn't realize that it would go on to the children like it does. But I left, and the elders wanted to know why, because I went to them and said, I'm out of here, I can't do this no more. And they said, well, you need to go back. I said, no, can't do that. And they said, well, yeah, you have to. If you don't, you're not repentant, you're not making the marriage work, you'll be disfellowshipped. And they kept asking why, and I didn't tell them why, what had happened, anything at all. So I said, you know what? Jehovah guides organization. So if Jehovah doesn't want me as part of it, then he'll disfellowship me. It won't be you. And they said, okay. And they disfellowshipped me. So in my heart, in my mind, what I saw was Jehovah didn't want me anymore. He kicked me out. So that meant no more reading the Bible, no more prayer. And it's really hard to teach your kids all that stuff to get them through Armageddon when you're not able to do it yourself. And all I wanted to know was, how do I get back? You know, if I had known this group existed then, oh man. I just wanted to know how to get back. So I went to the elders begging, what can I do? You know, well, you have to come to meetings for a year before we'll talk to you. Okay. So I'd go to meetings. I'd sit in the back. I'd leave when it was over. One time a sister approached me and I said, I'm disfellowshipped. She fell over a chair, jumping out of the way. I didn't have leprosy. I was there trying to get back. It was very disheartening. After a year, I found this, at the time, what I thought was this really great man. And boy, he had a lot of fun things to say about the witnesses. I'd be talking to the elders on the line, you know, about going to the meeting or something to get reinstated, and he'd be, it's a cult, get out of it, leave it alone. But we decided to get married, and I asked the elders to study with him. Because I had been trying to talk to him, but I didn't have God's blessing anymore, and I couldn't open my Bible, and I couldn't pray for them to help. So I was kind of stuck as to how to get that to him. So they finally agreed to study with him if I would quit writing letters to be reinstated. Because I was driving them crazy writing letters. So after a year, I said, okay, my year's up. They said, okay, you can turn in a letter. I said, good. So I turned one in, really. I had the right to turn it in now. And they said, now we're going to watch you for 6 months and see if you really mean what's in the letter, then we'll make a determination. Okay. So I waited another 6 months of having leprosy, of being thrown out of the kingdom hall, you know, sitting in the back, leaving as soon as it was over. And then after 6 months, I said, okay, time's up again. And they said, yep, you're right. We took your letter at a year. We've watched you for 6 months. If you're sincere, in 6 months from now, we'll reinstate you. I didn't know what to do. I was really, really lost. I still had children who were living with a disfellowship parent who would die if Armageddon came. And I didn't know how to get through. But I waited the next 6 months. I got reinstated. Almost to the day from the time I was disfellowshipped. Their guidelines, their numbers. So now I'm back and I'm thinking, okay, things are good. My husband got baptized. We had 2 more children. So now I've got 4. And when I came back, I was going to make sure things were right. I was a full-time pioneer. I never went to a door that I didn't say anything I could say to make those people listen. I kept the best records. I said, you know, I had the reasoning from the scriptures book, memorized. Every objection. There's nothing you can throw out there that I don't have an answer for in the society, which is what really tough now from that side of it, right? My children were actually on circuit assemblies and district assemblies up there because Mom got them up at 6 in the morning to do the daily text. We studied for all the meetings. You wonder why we don't know what's in those literatures from 50 years ago? We don't have time to go back and read those things. Everything we have to do every day is overwhelming. Those kids never went to bed without a review of the daily text. They never went to a watchtower study not prepared. I pioneered. I reached out. I did everything I could. The elders saw that. And they decided that they would use me as a sister in the congregation to talk to other sisters who were having problems. And the first one was a new person. She wasn't actually baptized yet. And she just didn't want to do anything. So I encouraged her, took her out on service, tried to help her. And I found out her problem was that, you know, her Bible study babysat her child and molested her. And I said, oh, that didn't happen. Goes, well, it did, but they sent someone from Bethel down and they investigated it and we can't prove it. I said, well, you must have went to the police. No, the elder said I couldn't. I was like, what? I was stunned. And then I just started watching them with children and I wouldn't let them around my child, but I was literally afraid to say anything otherwise. And the elders had told me point blank, if you do anything that goes against what we say, you'll be disfellowshipped again. And I was not going to find myself in that position ever, ever again. I saw a lot of other things happen too. I wrote a letter about some concerns I had to the Watchtower Society, and they answered me. And when they answer you, they send a letter back to your congregation, too, but we didn't actually live in the territory, so it went to the wrong hall. So I told the brothers, I was a little bit lippy, as they called it, I told the brothers that I would be talking to the circuit overseer about it when they came. So they said, well, let us see the letter. Let's see exactly what you put into it. So I gave it to them, and they held it until the circuit overseer left. And then they gave it back and told me I needed to learn my place. Now I was pioneering. I was putting 90-some hours a week in, or a month, and I was raising four children. And the circuit overseer came, and constantly, we weren't doing enough. We weren't reaching out. We weren't going to survive. I remember we had one pioneer meeting, which was supposed to be an encouraging time, and he reamed us so bad about not doing enough in the congregation that I left that place, and I put my son in the car seat. He was 4 months old. And I drove down the highway, and I looked at the car seat, and I kept thinking, would it survive if I hit a pole? Because, you know, you got those nice big cement things. And I thought, well, maybe if I took him out and set him on the side of the road, someone would get him. That way I wouldn't have to worry about the car crash. That was more than I could take. It was more than my family could take. So I backed off of pioneering. In fact, my husband really came to the fore. He gave them my pioneer card and told them that I could get as many hours as I wanted in every month. He didn't care. But if I ever turned in time again to them, there'd be a problem. Because he was not going to let that happen anymore. And I kind of just quit going to Kingdom Hall. I didn't know what to do. I was really, really lost. I didn't think I was going to get my kids through. I was still studying with them, praying with them, teaching them everything they could have. I just didn't know how to make it through. I had a neighbor who, as irritating as she was always happy. And I didn't understand that because she was demonized. She was obviously in the world. And she had these stupid standards for her children. They couldn't listen to worldly music. Well, everything you listen to is worldly, unless it's a Kingdom Hall tape. They had to listen to Christian music, which made no sense. They could play, but they couldn't spend the night at this person's house who didn't believe in Jesus, which we believed in Jesus. Why do you think I went to the door? And she was always, always happy. After 4 years, this woman was still always happy. And I could not understand that. Because at first, if you see a worldly person, they're happy. Well, okay, well, that's going to pass. You know? And when she prayed about something, it was answered. It was answered. And that didn't make sense because, well, maybe the demons would answer it once or twice. But in time, you know, all good things come from God. And I knew that. And I didn't understand why he would be answering her prayers, but not mine, for some type of peace and some type of relief. I just kept not going to the Kingdom Hall, and I kept going over my choices if I didn't stay a witness. And I was at that place when I was disfellowshipped where I really wanted to walk away, but I couldn't leave Jehovah. And I didn't know the way out. And I went online. Later on, my daughter reminded me that when she did this, I made her write the whole Watchtower article about it, by the way. I went online, and I found a couple support groups. I started learning about Jehovah's Witnesses. And the UN, that just threw me for a loop. Anything else I could probably have accepted. You know, I read the Revelation book and thought, where do they come up with the idea of the locusts, the tracks that they sent out? And it made no sense, but okay. You know, I wasn't grasping it. It was me that wasn't grasping it. It wasn't the organization. But the UN thing really threw me. So I called two friends in Michigan, pioneers, in different halls, and I asked them about it. And the one immediately was infuriated with me for being apostate and even suggesting it. I said, well, you know, I went to the UN site. I checked this out. You know, it's accurate. And she said, it is not. And even if you have no right to, why would you even check it out? You have no right to question it. I said, wait a minute. Now, the Bereans were commended for it. We were told when we came into the truth, it was because we studied. We go to doors and tell people to examine with their teachings. Now you're telling me that I don't, as a 17-year witness, have the right? And she said, don't ever call here again. So I just lost a friend of 17 years. I was stunned at the harsh reaction from that. So I called the other girl, and she said, well, I've never heard of it. So she went to talk to her elders. And she came back. She goes, oh, yeah, they joined it for the library. I said, wow. Okay. I said, isn't that kind of harsh? I can't swim at the YMCA, but you can be part of the UN. That was really, really tough. I didn't get that. It just wasn't clicking. And I just, 9/11 happened right before that, and the reaction at our Kingdom Hall, I don't know what it was around the country, but, well, you know, every day thousands of brothers die, so really 3,000 dying at one time in one place is really nothing significant. And that just tore my heart. It was so heartbreaking to watch all of that happen, even from Florida, that seemed as callous as you could get. And I would think, being in New York, they would have been out there digging, bloodied hands, pulling people out, and they weren't. I've even heard the doors were locked and fear of looting, and it's just a horrifying reaction as a Christian from my perspective of what I thought the organization was. So I quit going to the meetings, and I wasn't missed. It was okay, other than, you know, now and then, how come you didn't encourage Sister So-and-so or take food over to Brother So-and-so or something like that. It really wasn't an issue. But my neighbor kept talking to me. And so I called her one day. I said, all right, bring your Bible and come down here. And we've had these discussions before. So she was a little hesitant. And I said, don't worry, I'm not even opening a Bible. I said, I will not have one out. I'm not debating it. I'm going to ask you a question. You're going to answer the question. We're moving on to the next one. End of discussion. So she came down. The first thing I said is, what happens when you walk in your church? Nothing. Why do you let them pull your children away from you and put them in some room? Well, that's not exactly what we do with them. There's a daycare. How could you possibly believe in the Trinity? So then she answered, she went into a little bit. And do you really think you deserve to go to heaven? Yes, I do. Now, here's a worldly person, content with her answers, satisfied in Christ. Made no sense. Very confusing for me. I want to die, and she's happy, and I have the truth. That just didn't make sense. My daughter, just before that, just to show you just how watchtower conditioned I was, she was a ninth grader, my oldest one. She was baptized, by the way. She was baptized when she was 9. She was so short, they had to hold her and dunk her and hold her because she was so little. She was like the smallest one they'd ever put in the tank. She wanted to go to a school dance. I said, okay, no problem. Really? Yeah, just look up in Watchtower, tell me what it says. If it says you can go, you can go. And she says, okay. So next week comes along, she goes, so Mom, can I go to the dance? I said, sure, did you look it up? Oh, they didn't say nothing on dances. I said, oh, I'm sure they did. So we pulled out the 1965 Watchtower, and then 1998 or whatever it was, found out that no witnesses don't go to school dances, and so she couldn't go. It wasn't based on any other choice, just the Watchtower said no. I was talking to these women online, and I got this letter, or email, I guess it was, from Arlene. And I had told her about my daughter wanting to go to school dance, and she goes, you know what, you need to take your daughter out to a PG movie, buy her a cute shirt, and go to the dance. My daughter loves Arlene forever. I chaperoned the dance, but she got to go. And again, it was just a matter of someone just saying, you have the right to do things with your children and be happy. Because the Watchtower said you couldn't. Watchtower said she couldn't wear spaghetti straps. Watchtower said she couldn't wear glitter. She was told she couldn't go out of service one day because of having glitter. This is a 14-year-old at the time who was auxiliary pioneering, but was sent home from an elder because she had glitter on. Her makeup, her eyeshadow had some glitter. I didn't want to be in the Watchtower anymore. I wanted that peace that my neighbor had. That truth that was supposed to set me free wasn't keeping me very free. I went to see a psychiatrist, and she said, well, you know, I treat a lot of Jehovah's Witnesses. I said, really? Okay. And she goes, well, but you know, there are people out there that don't like to have that freedom of choice. They like things to be black and white. Wow. See, I thought I was I was free. It was the world that was entrapped. It was me that was free. And here she's telling me I'm not. And then I started thinking, what would I lose? My ex-husband could take custody of the children. My current husband could take the kids. He was a baptized brother. I didn't know what their reaction would be. A girl at work said, you know, if you want to check out some churches, I'll go with you. I said, no, that's okay. Don't want to walk into a church. So she said, okay, and the next week she made the same offer. And the next week she made the same offer. finally said, okay, I'll go. But a couple conditions. One, I'm not telling anybody. Not my children. I didn't want them to know. Didn't know how they would react. Not my husband. Certainly not any of the people at work, because I worked with a lot of witnesses and it would get around. She said, okay, that's fine. I said, okay, there's one more. She said, what? I said, well, we're parking at the edge of the parking lot, and the first person who floats off the ground, I'm out the door. She said, okay, no problem. And she made it real easy. I didn't understand that. And I went in there really waiting for someone to float, bounce, jump, something really bad. And nothing happened. Well, the kids knew that we had been about 3 months without going to many meetings, and although they were really happy about that, they weren't mentioning it to Mom because they figured it was going to happen again. I spent 15 years of Sarah's life telling her this was the truth. 9 or 10 of Joey's, and then the 2 little ones. So I pulled Sarah and Joey in the room, and I said, we need to talk. I said, I won't make the choice for you, but I don't want to go back to the Kingdom Hall. I can't tell you what's right. I can't tell you what's wrong. I won't open my Bible. I don't know. I said, I'll drive you to the hall if you want. I'll get you rides. I'll do whatever you need. And my 15-year-old, 14, whatever Sarah was at the time, she turned and she goes, thank God, Mom. She goes, I was thinking I was going to have to go till I was 18. And here I'm thinking they're going to think I just sent them out to the wolves, and they were actually really happy about it. But I still wanted to just kind of go away quietly. I didn't want to be marked. I didn't want to be disfellowshipped. I just wanted to disappear. That way my ex-husband and I could still get along and life would be okay. But apparently word got out there that I went to a church. And all of a sudden, after 3 months, now the elders were interested in me. And they came to the door and I wasn't there. And I was like, tell them not to come back. So my husband didn't know what to do. And so I called him and I said, please don't come back. I don't know what I want. I don't want to make a choice. I don't want to make a decision. Well, we heard you're going to a church. I said, I don't know anything about your claims. I kind of avoided it. So they came out again. I still wasn't home. They got my children. And so they said to my 5-year-old, Samantha, we hear mommy's taking you to a church. She goes, yeah, and it's really cool. They teach me all about Jesus. Yeah, I was in trouble. She was really, really happy, though. And so suffice it to say, they didn't stop coming. They came back more. And I was hiding in closets from these people. I didn't understand how I was hiding from the witnesses. It didn't make sense. And I changed my number at work. My phone number on my cell phone. I work for a cellular company, and they called Ohio to my brother and got the number, and so they could keep calling me. So changing my number didn't work. We told them to stay off the property. They didn't. It didn't work. They wanted to talk to me because they wanted that grounds for disfellowshipping, and they didn't have anything because I wouldn't tell them nothing. So finally, I decided that it had to stop. It had to stop. So I wrote a letter of disassociation. And I still hadn't talked to my husband about this. He's an alcoholic. He was drinking. He was smoking at the time, still in good standings. It was his brother, that went and told the elders I was going to church. Didn't mention that he was shutting down bars with other sisters or that he was smoking, but I went to a church, and that was the bad side. I wrote the letter, and I showed him, and it basically said that, you know, no matter what, the teachings that you gave me show that I have to be part of a pure religion. Now, being part of Babylon the Great is wrong. So if you're part of the UN, either you're not the true religion, or your teachings are wrong. And either way, I have to get out. And that was my basis for it. And they read the letter. They accepted it. They let that go. My ex-husband, I was so afraid of what he would do. He's like, oh, can I borrow your Crisis of Conscience book? And he's a witness in good standing, and he has no use for it. But, you know, he had to call me last month and say, you know, my mom and dad are coming down, and they really want to see the kids. Did Sarah sign that letter of disassociation, too? Because if so, she's not going to be allowed in the house. And I was like, that's her grandchild. She was 14. Why would it matter? I need to know. And I said, no, she's not allowed to make those choices yet. Last year I came here after just 4 months of being disassociated. About 3 months after I disassociated myself, I bought my first cross. We celebrated Easter. It was the first time the memorial ever meant anything. And I tell you what, I made the memorial as special for those kids as I could. We bought new outfits. They got out of school. We went out to dinner first. Easter was an amazing event. My little girl, Samantha, who's six, the one who told the elders about Jesus, we went and saw the play the church did, which was incredibly moving, and we both went down afterwards and accepted Christ. And that was really neat to do. It's a tough, tough thing to go from that side of the world to this one. In Psalms 143, there's a scripture in verse 4 says, "My spirit is overwhelmed and faints within me, wrapped in gloom. My heart within my bosom grows numb." I spent 35 years like that, from the Worldwide Church of God to Jehovah's Witnesses. But I didn't do what the witnesses never do. I didn't go that scripture before that said, "The enemy has pursued and persecuted my soul." That's what I missed. Who was giving me that? The end of that chapter, it says, "Save my life, O Lord, your namesake and your righteousness. Bring my life out of trouble and free me from distress." In the year and a half that I've been out, I've never once tried to kill myself. I've never thought about taking out my children so they could just be resurrected and be safe, because I thought about it all the time before that. I understand these people who kill their families. I've been there over and over again. I understand that desire to get to that point. Since people who didn't know me, had no reason to, put all those things out there, have helped me learn about Christ and what real grace is all about. That was a brand new word to me. How could you be associated with the Bible for 35 years and not know what grace is? I didn't know. I've never thought about killing myself or my children. We still have problems. Life still goes on. But it's with a new peace of mind that I can get through it. You know, that's an amazing thing. My 16-year-old went through some trouble at school. You know, they were not happy that she wasn't a witness, and they called her on everything. And some wonderful women from the Women Awake had actually sent me some books on answering the witnesses, a lot of the stuff that's out here. And Sarah just tore them up. She didn't have any patience for them. She's actually planning to go into the Marines, which is just a huge mindset change from what she was a year and a half ago. Samantha got to lead the Pledge of Allegiance at school, which was just really cool. And the one thing that happened that was really neat with Samantha that I have to tell you is that we went through Easter, went through all of that. We were real excited. A month later, her friend had a birthday party, so I let her go, her first birthday party. Everything's a first for us. I mean, last year's Christmas was amazing. It was just, we had the tree up Thanksgiving Day, and it was real. So Samantha went to this birthday party, and she came. I went and picked her up, and, you know, I kind of warned her ahead of time. She doesn't know how to sing happy birthday. She doesn't know, you know. So if she runs to blow out the candles, she doesn't know what's going on. And I get her in the car. I'm like, "So did you have a good time?" "No." I said, "Why?" And, as a mom, I'm thinking, oh, my goodness, what happened? She goes, "I'm going to be six this year. I could have had five of those, Mom." I was like, "Oh, okay." So she saw it from that side, and that's good. And the kids have all completely adjusted. They're happy to be out. And every day, learning about Christ has been an experience. I'm learning to open my Bible. I'm learning to pray. Brand new thing. I knew it all as a witness, and now I know nothing. Go figure. And coming here, just every time I hear scripture, I go back and go, okay, that's one more affirmation in my heart that this wasn't the truth. In fact, the one girl from Women Awake told me if I ever called it the truth again, that she was going to take me out. And even that thinking changed how it was. So that's it. Thanks, guys.